I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's sunny and summery in West London. We're psyched because Euros are coming up.
Oh, yes.
And we've got a ton of stuff to get through because we had a whole bunch of internationals. We have Antonio Conte and changes possibly at Spurs. But hey, let's start at the very top of the tree. Real Madrid bringing back Carlo Ancelotti, gave his first press conference. And to break it down, here's Sid Lowe. Sid, obviously, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets that Carlo may have shared. When he left Real Madrid, he loved everybody, except for one person, the guy who fired him, because I think he felt he was unfairly treated. But you know what? It's a sign of intelligence to change your mind and let bygones be bygones and move on. And he was even kind about Florentino, no, in the opening press conference.
Yeah, it was. It's a sign of intelligence. It's also a sign of awareness that if that's the way back to Real Madrid, then so be it. And I thought there was something very telling about what felt to me like a message even to Zidane. And he said, I've been in this game for 40 years and people talk and it's normal. And so long as there's respect, that's fine. There can be respect between journalists and players and managers. And so I don't know what the relationship was between Zidane and Florentino Perez, but when I was called, I had no doubts, zero doubts. And I think that's it in a nutshell. That is saying, okay, so it's Real Madrid. So all that stuff that goes with it, I know that. I'm used to it. And I felt like there was a slight reproach for Zidane there, a kind of a sense of, look, come on, you know what the score is, you know what the situation is, these are things you put up with, and in return for it, you get the chance to coach Real Madrid.
Yeah, but Zidane's had that on two stints, and
exactly.
Also Zidane
and
doesn't need
exactly.
it.
Exactly, and he's had his time now. Yeah, and of course, if Zidane had felt that he had the team that would win the Champions League for the next 3 years, as they had done, of course, previously 3 years in a row with him, I imagine that he would have been perhaps that little bit more willing to put up with some of these things.
My early easy reading, I'd love to hear from both of you, is that this is the continuity choice. So you're getting somebody who in many ways has a lot of the qualities that Zidane has. Not a coincidence the two were close and worked together, both at Juve and at Real Madrid. But in other words, you're getting somebody who won't embarrass you with the media in public, like some former Real Madrid managers I could mention, somebody who's going to work and keep the veterans happy, somebody who isn't wedded to necessarily one system, Carlo probably even more so than others. He'll look at the players he has, he'll work 3-5, whatever formation he needs to do. He's a Galactico whisperer, and he's also won things there, and he knows what he's getting into. He knows the club very, very well. He knows the dynamic very well.
So
in that sense, it's good. It's also short term, though, right? This isn't somebody who's going to set Madrid on a new path. By appointing him, we kind of have the confirmation that we're going to squeeze as much as we can out of this team for the next 2 years and then look forward, right?
I'm not sure it's quite as clear cut as squeeze the most as we can out of this team and then look forward, because I think there will be a premium placed on the idea of bringing young players through and wanting Ancelotti to do that. But it will be the young players currently at the squad rather than signings. And I think if you listen to the press conference yesterday, if there was a recurring theme, I think that recurring theme was, this is the squad I've got. You know, don't expect big signings, don't expect a huge revolution. This is a squad I've got, and I will work with the tools that I have in my hand. And I think you're right to talk about him as a continuity candidate. I think there's another C word that we could use there, perhaps, which is comfort. This is the comfort candidate. This is the one, the guy that, as you've already alluded to, won't make life difficult, will deal with what you've got, will accept the policy laid down by the club, will try to work within that, will maybe at times do what he feels like, but he will do that in a way that doesn't necessarily cause conflict, or at least not publicly, and will just kind of get on with the job. And I think the other thing you've said that's right is this is short term. This is someone you can bring in and put very bluntly, and I hate to say this because it sounds very cruel, this is someone you can bring in and also someone you can move out when the time is right, when you feel like you can maybe get to a different candidate. Because bear in mind that part of the reason that Ancelotti is there is because he can be, and some of the other candidates couldn't.
That's something that we're going to get into in the Gavin Jules podcast later. But I want to ask you just off the top, because obviously it's Cristiano, and obviously it leads to clicks. I think he was asked about this three times, almost as many times as Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane, about Cristiano. And obviously he's got a year left at Juve. I think everybody's reported that if Cristiano wants to leave Juve, I don't think Juve would stand in his way as long as they get a certain fee back for him. He kind of skirted the question a little bit, saying like, well, I want to be respectful and not talk about players who are under contract with other teams. Does that mean anything? Is there any scenario in which Cristiano and Carlo are reunited?
I don't think so. I mean, that scenario would have to be that Cristiano would have to be very, very cheap. That's the first thing. Because bear in mind that, the undercurrent to this whole discussion about whether or not players can come in is about the financial situation at Real Madrid, about the ability to bring players in. And also that belief within the club that they do have very good young players, that those players need continuity and confidence and trust from their manager. And of course, Ronaldo doesn't necessarily fit that model, which isn't to say it's impossible. But I do think it's very, very difficult, particularly if he costs money. And I think you're right, Ancelotti sidestepped it a little bit yesterday, but I felt it was a bit more than the sidestep. I felt it was him saying, look, you know, we haven't really talked about this yet, but I don't really see how that's realistic. And actually, by the way, I think that Ancelotti was telling the truth yesterday in his answers to do with the future and to do with the new squad and so on. And he said repeatedly, we haven't had time to talk about this. And I think he's telling the truth. They haven't. Basically, what's happened so far? Carlo, do you want to come back? Yes, please. Great. Here's the contract signed. Right, you've been presented. And at that point, go, okay, right. And I'm sure there would have been conversations about how you structure the squad and so on, but they would have been very, very sketchy. And so in terms of things like new players coming in terms of Cristiano Ronaldo, in terms of Sergio Ramos, Ancelotti's response to all of that basically was, I don't know. And I think he's telling the truth. I think he doesn't know yet.
Well, we're going to try to help him out on the Gavin Jules podcast, and we're going to get a lot more granular here. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't want to be mean with Carlo because we all love him. It does feel a bit like this sort of goose-eating Chelsea kind of appointment where Gab is rolling his eyes, Sid, where you call him because the other people on your shortlist, so let's say...
You're saying Carlo wasn't first choice.
He wasn't first choice. He was not even second choice, probably. It was Pochettino, maybe Allegri, maybe Conte, maybe Zidane staying, you know, those four. And then after that, when Florentino Perez realized, like, uh-oh, where can we go now? The easiest way was to go Carlo. You knew he was going to say yes. You know, like Sid just said, you can sack him anytime and he won't be cross. You can bring Raul as an assistant and he will groom Raul like he did with Zidane. All right. And Raul can take over if needed in 2 years or 3 years' time.
Okay, so Sid, help us out with the Jules theory. I mean, I think we all agree he wasn't first choice. I think first choice was Zidane staying.
Yeah, probably.
And winning the league. Who do you reckon second, third, fourth choice were? I mean, or do you think those three guys that Jules mentioned, Pochettino, Conte, and Allegri, were ahead of Carlo in the pecking order? Because personally, I don't think Conte was, but that's just me.
I don't know about Conte, although I think he's a candidate that suddenly emerges as a possibility in a situation in which they need to find someone. I think that's the thing about Conte. In a way, this is relatively clear-cut, in that Real Madrid have known for a while that it was very likely that Zidane would walk away at the end of the season. In fact, I would be willing to push it without being able to stand it up 100%. It's not just they've known it was quite likely, they pretty much assumed it would happen and they were definitely preparing for it. And that preparation had led them to conversations with Allegri. And Real Madrid, at least, believed that was going to happen. Now, quite why Allegri ends up at Juventus instead of Real Madrid, I must confess, I don't know the answer to that.
But yeah, I can help you with that. He ended up at Juventus because it's the club that he's managed before. He knows the environment better. Obviously, I think also he looked at the squad, and Juventus have spent a lot of money on young players. And he looked at Real Madrid squad, and he said, you know, I'm going to be treated with skepticism when I come here because I'm foreign. If I don't win straight away, haven't coached in a while, and there's a lot of older players, I don't know how much the club are going
to
spend.
So it's more comfortable to go to Juve.
I think in some ways it's an easier starting point. I think you'd still love to manage Real Madrid, but I think when that possibility opened up, I think it was Allegri who moved away from Real Madrid more so than the other way around. Not saying Real Madrid were wedded to
that's
him.
Right.
Yeah, that's,
but,
that makes
you know,
sense.
I can understand his viewpoint there. So, but
yeah, no, I think
if this is true.
I think that's right. And I also think there's something about the timing.
Okay, so Pochettino then.
Which Zidane doesn't help with, by the way, because of course Zidane doesn't give a definitive answer until later on, even if the club frankly believe and assume that it's coming. They can't fully close everything off until he's actually gone. Pochettino then becomes the next candidate, and this is someone, of course, that they've been trying to chase for a very long time. Someone who, when they first spoke to him, basically rolled their eyes and couldn't believe it when he said, no, I haven't got a release clause at Spurs. And genuinely, the conversation internally at Real Madrid was, what an idiot. How could he have not put himself in a position where he had a release clause? So that made that impossible. And that hasn't all kind of fallen into place at quite the right time this time round. Of course, Real Madrid are a club that are very, very conscious of not treading on the toes too much of Paris Saint-Germain for all sorts of reasons, but they have been for a long time. It's not just about Mbappe. And so then you do get this scenario in which now Conte, I think, is a slightly different one, in that Conte is this candidate who suddenly appears on the market that you're not expecting. And so at that point, it all feels plausible. That's not necessarily to say that he is a candidate, but certainly Carlo isn't the first choice. But to go back to what Jules was saying, he's the choice that's comfortable. He's the choice that can kind of get you through this phase now, that can resolve this problem for you now and can do it very, very quickly. You know, this isn't a case of them going the whole summer without a manager. This is right. Within, 3 days since Zidane went, there's our new manager. It's done. And I think that is, kind of a very comfortable position for everyone to slip into.
And already we saw in that press conference that everything is pacified. He said all the right things about everyone and everything. And he's just, for that, he's just perfect. Carlo is perfect. He's 61. He's been through so many things as a player, as a manager, that he knows exactly what to say, when, in what kind of environment, how to say. Even when he said to, on the back of what we said earlier about, oh, Zidane was not happy with the press and the leaks in the press. And Carlo said, oh, you're all the same here. You're just 5 years older, but it's all the same guys that I knew so well 5 years ago. But even that was perfect. And I just think, like, the guy is a genius in terms of communication, man management, whether that's man managing his people, his players, his people, people above him, people under him, but also the fans, also the journalists, the media, everything. And for that, it's perfect.
All right, so
I absolutely love that line, by the way. That was my favorite line of the whole press conference.
It was great.
Nothing's changed in 5 years. The only thing that changes at Real Madrid is the managers. Now, that's another brilliant example of how Ancelotti can say something really quite incendiary in some ways. You know, you think about what he's actually saying there. He's saying something pretty incendiary, but he's saying it in such a sort of Ancelotti way that it feels like a sort of a kind of a gentle sort of friendly remark. But in fact, that's a pretty serious thing he's pointing out there.
It's a great point. I'm trying to imagine Jose Mourinho. In fact, I was hearing Jose Mourinho's voice in my head saying the exact same thing, and it would be taken very, very differently.
Totally differently. Yeah, totally.
All right, let's try to help out. Let's try to get Real Madrid fans a little bit excited. One of my best friends is a very big Real Madrid fan, and he says we're unduly harsh on them. So I want to seek out some of the pause. I want to project forward. Carlo says he hasn't had time.
By the way, Gab, just let me interrupt there. I am shocked, absolutely shocked, I tell you, that a fan of a football club thinks journalists are being harsh on his club. It's funny how we're never, ever, ever, we are never, ever, ever overly nice to their clubs, are we? No, never.
That's true.
We've all got it in for them. We've got it in for Real Madrid and Barcelona and Liverpool and Everton and Manchester United and Man City, all of them. We hate them all.
All at the same time. I know. You know what? Even clubs like Union Berlin, St. Pauli, all these likable clubs. Yeah. They've jumped the shark too. All right. No, but I want to try to project forward and try to imagine what Real Madrid can do like. And I'd like to do this in a slightly organized way for once. So starting at the back, Courtois, easy, staying, no issue there, right? If you guys disagree, stop me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In defense, this is where it gets immediately interesting, right? So I'm assuming Dani Carvajal will be fit, so you've got a decent right back. Lucas Vázquez, I'm putting him among the right backs, but he's out of contract. Is there any chance he stays?
And yeah,
he's gonna renew, right? Because he's a useful guy to have around, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, you have Odriozola, whatever. And then obviously left back, you got Ferlamondi. You got Miguel, who looked pretty good from what we've seen. Marcelo has a year left. Obviously, Marcelo loves Carlo and Carlo loves Marcelo because they're so lovable. Is he just going to stick around for another year? He's not going to be able to trick the club into giving him a new deal, right?
He won't get a new deal. The question mark, I suppose, is how they manage his continuity now, whether they can maybe encourage him to go to the US, whether he sees himself playing any kind of role. Because, of course, it's worth pointing out, you say that he loves Carlo and he's very happy there. Yeah, he loves Zidane as well. It didn't mean that he played often. In fact, the argument, I think, would be that Zidane played him more often than he should have done, and it still wasn't very much.
I agree.
Right. Okay, so in central defence, Eder Militao's played very well. Yeah. Surprisingly well, I think, and especially in the second half of the season that just ended. Everybody loves Nacho. Alaba's coming in for a lot of money in terms of his wages. And then you have a Sergio Ramos issue. In fact, I would say we can look at them together, Sergio Ramos and Varane. Ramos is out of contract and on enormous wages. If he stays, he might have to be a pay cut, I would assume. Varane has a year left, so you either give him a new contract or otherwise you run the risk of him running it down or you sell him. How do you see this? Well, what's the vibe there? What's the best solution? Because you don't need five central defenders, right?
Right, okay, so there's a difference between what's the best solution and how will this end, because it may not end with the best solution.
Oh, I know that. That's why I want to get the Dr. Sid Lowe solution.
Okay,
what should happen?
The solution is this.
And then what will happen?
Okay, right. The money that David Alaba is getting is the money that Sergio Ramos would have got. So he's gone. I mean, it would take something very, very, very dramatic, I think, for Ramos to stay now.
You don't think Carlo can...
Not least because...
You don't think Carlo can convince... I mean, yesterday he said in the presser, I can't imagine a Real Madrid without Sergio Ramos. You don't think that somehow he can convince...
Not quite. No, Jules, that's the thing. He didn't quite say that. And I think it's important that he didn't quite say it. Now, I know he leaned towards it, but I think it's important that he didn't quite say it. He was asked a very, very leading question, which was, can you imagine a Real Madrid without Sergio Ramos? To which, and he'd already said, I don't know what's going to happen with Ramos. We'll talk about him. Obviously, he's part of the squad, but we need to talk about all of these things. So he didn't kind of definitively defend him. When he was asked this leading question, can you imagine a Real Madrid without Sergio Ramos? He said, I couldn't imagine a Real Madrid, and there was a pause, and he said, without Carlo Ancelotti, but it happened. So he avoided saying that he can't imagine a Real Madrid without Ramos, because he knows, by the way, not necessarily because he knows that Ramos is gone, but because he knows that decision is not his. And you say, could he persuade Ramos to stay? Well, Zidane was trying to persuade Ramos to stay. The question isn't Ramos, unless, of course, Ramos suddenly says, okay, I'll take a huge pay cut and I'll stay. The question is the club. And the club and Ramos just basically not having agreed all the way through this season. Look, it's worth pointing this out. 27 days till his contract's up. You know, you don't leave your captain that late if you're planning to renew him unless something dramatically changes in the financial value you place on that.
Or unless you're Barcelona and it's Lionel Messi, right?
Well, unless you're Barcelona and Lionel Messi, because that's slightly different, because Barcelona have consistently...
I know.
So it's the same scenario flipped. It's because that depends on the player. This depends, I think, much more on the club. Unless the player suddenly says, which, by the way, Messi's not going to do at Barcelona, yeah, pay me a pittance. I'll play for free. Which, by the way, Ramos said 3 years ago that he would do. And we'd like to see the evidence of this, Sergio. Are you going to play for free?
Stop it. Don't have a go. Don't be anti-Sergio Ramos.
I'm with Sid.
So if Ramos is gone, then you have Varane. I presume would you try to extend Varane?
You would try to extend Varane, but I think what would also happen is if Varane is determined to walk away, if you can get a good fee for him, you take it.
Right. Well, look, I mean,
think that's what happens now.
If that's a situation, you get Varane for another season. A, he might change his mind and extend. He might be rubbish. You might be glad to be shot of him. A year from now, if Adrian Militao continues his development, a year from now, you have a central defense of Alaba and Adrian Militao, or you bring in another central defender. It's not the end of the world. I want to move into midfield. Obviously, Casemiro, Modric, Kroos, Stalwarts, Valverde, I think we can add to that.
Yeah.
And then you have Blanco and then Odegaard. I'm assuming Blanco's going to get more minutes. What happens to Odegaard? Do you try to shift him, or do you ask Carlo, hey, do you want this guy? Is he any good?
I think Real Madrid would like Odegaard to be a good player. And I think part of this as well is not just about the team. It's about the justification of a policy, which, and I'm going to say this now because I think it's very easy to point the finger at it, that I thought was pretty sensible, which was a shift in policy a few years ago, which is, okay, we cannot afford to sign Galacticos all the time now, so we go for the next generation of really good young players. And some of those young players haven't been as good as hoped. Some of those young players just haven't had opportunities. Some of those young players have, you know, in the case of Odegaard, you know, you look at Odegaard and you say, well, it didn't work at Real Madrid. Well, no, but maybe that's because there's a certain Toni Kroos and a certain Luka Modric in front of him. And so I think Madrid would like him to come back and succeed, A, because it would be good for him to succeed, but B, I think because it would reinforce that policy, which at the moment looks a little weaker than I think it possibly needs to, because I think it was a sensible enough policy, but it hasn't worked yet. So I think they would like him to succeed. That said, again, and I think this is true of so many big clubs this summer, and it's even more true of Barca than it is of Real Madrid, if there is a big offer, you listen. Because right now, if there's a big offer for anyone, you listen to anyone.
I think Odegaard, because the only place where there's a little bit of money left this summer is the Premier League. Yeah. Odegaard was obviously in the shop window. I don't think he was necessarily as stratospheric as some people make it seem at Arsenal. You can tell he's a very good player. That might be an out. Otherwise, I would tend to agree with you. Part of those, let's go sort of in the winger attacking midfielder sector, because I look at this and there's a lot of bodies there. So obviously you've got the Hazard question. Hazard will be back because he's been injured. You can't shift him and he makes a lot of money. And I'm assuming they're hoping that Carlo can rehabilitate him.
Definitely.
We agree that that's the right thing to do with Hazard. You have no other options, right?
And that's the kind of stuff Carlo loves as well.
Gareth Bale, I think he loves a little bit less. You're just stuck and you hope to place him on loan somewhere, right? There's no question that, especially he's got a year left on his deal, there's no question of Gareth Bale. We're all in agreement on this, yeah?
Well, look, I think with Gareth Bale, you do what you can with Gareth Bale, and I think you're probably in a situation in which he has to come back, in which case you might as well try and use him. And by the way, last season, the limited contribution in goals from the other attacking players, it's difficult not to look at Real Madrid last year and think, you know what, actually Gareth Bale probably would have given them something. Maybe not as much as you'd like, but he may well have given them something. So I think with Bale,
Gabby's not convinced.
No, let's not reopen
what,
Bale.
Compared to the goal scoring contributions we're talking
it's
about.
It's just because Vinicius can't finish.
This is the thing about Gareth Bale. You can argue about his performances, but the statistics, now I know they're not everything, but the contribution. Last year, I think I'm right in saying that Real Madrid's second top scorer was Casemiro in the league with six.
Yeah, that's right.
Casemiro. And you know, put bluntly, and I don't want to sound like angry fan on football phoning, that's not good enough.
Okay,
he's not good enough from the other attacking players, and Bale would have given you more goals than that. I am absolutely convinced by that. Now the question is, would he have given you anything else?
Okay, all right. Let's put that to one side because, he scored a lot of goals at the end of the season, a lot. I mean, eight or ten.
Yeah, like, but it's one goal or assist every 83 minutes.
Because the guy can never play. The guy can never get on the pitch. But whatever. In terms of. There's four other guys here that I quickly want to run through in this because I think they're different situations, right? Vinicius looks absolutely terrifying for opponents, and then he looks terrifying for Real Madrid when he shoots on goal.
Yeah.
But there's so much there. We all agree you persevere with Vinicius, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Asensio, I think, had his moments. I don't know that you can get a fee for Asensio because I don't think there were enough of them, and he has proven his fitness enough, but he remains there. I wonder a little bit with the other two, which I find interesting. Isco's been so up and down. But should you want to play with an attacking midfielder, maybe, because we don't know what formation they play. Maybe they get a big striker and they go 4-3-1-2. I don't know. Maybe they play Hazard in the hole. Who knows, right? Is there a role for Isco, or are you kind of just carrying him along? And the other one is Rodrigo, because he's still very, very young.
I agree with Sid. You already have Odegaard. And you can't already, you already have the three midfielders slash four midfielder with Valverde who are dead starters. So where will Odegaard fit? And then if Odegaard fits somewhere, there's no way Isco will fit in there.
So you try to loan Isco if you can, yeah?
Well, look, the thing about Isco as well is, and again, this sounds cruel and I don't intend it to, but you've said that Isco's been very up and down. I don't know where these ups are.
Yeah, I agree.
He hasn't, you well, know.
On his weight. The weight is up. Yeah.
Did he play well in Cardiff? In the Champions League final?
In Cardiff? How long ago was Cardiff?
I know, I didn't have children then.
I know. I just like the idea of Isco.
Yeah, but we all do.
So do I. And he's very, very talented. But, he's when he's played well, when he's had continuity, that last 4 months of that season that ended in Cardiff, by the way, he was possibly the best player even in Spain. He was absolutely brilliant. But that's a long time ago now. And the thing about Isco is that I think, you know, in terms of what are you going to do with him? And again, I've already said this, but let's say it again. Well, you're going to do with him what you can. Because who wants him? Where does he go? Who picks him up? What do you do with his wages? I think Real Madrid's question mark with Isco is how they find a solution to make him someone else's problem, to be perfectly honest with you. And I really hope I'm wrong, because when he's played well, he's a lovely player, and I would love to think that Carlo somehow rehabilitates him and gets a great season out of him. But to be honest with you, I don't see it.
Me neither.
Okay, so then this brings me to my overall point here and the way it links with
you
the strikers.
You forgot King Karim, but I suspect...
No, because I'm getting to the strikers, right? So when I look at this, there are a lot of bodies. This is a lot of players, even with all the fixtures this season, right? Because we're talking, we think we've mentioned Hazard, Vinicius, Asensio, Isco, Rodrigo, we haven't mentioned, but I guess Bale. He's somebody who might be going on loan. Yeah, Bale, I've kind of written off. And then you have Benzema. I'm assuming we're not going to go through the Mariano sideshow again. So it's open. They might try to sign Mbappe. They might. Do we expect that they'll make a real push for at least one, you know, big signing at center forward? Do we expect this?
No.
Or is this just Is it just another year of Benzema?
To make the same point, but while I think Ancelotti was telling the truth when he said he didn't know what was going to happen, I think the recurring theme of yesterday's press conference was, I work with these players. I don't expect anything else to come in. And I suspect that is what we're going to see, that we won't see a dramatic shift unless maybe there's a striker that can come in relatively cheap from somewhere. I mean, look at Ancelotti's response to, do you need a superstar? He said, well, superstars make it easier, but I want goals from the midfielders. It's not just about buying someone who scores you 30. It's about Benzema's 30 being 50. It's about the wingers getting more goals. It's about the midfielders getting more goals. It's about, essentially, it's about dealing with the players I've got. So let's go to Mariano. At the risk of repeating myself, you do with Mariano what you can. If you can get anyone to sign him, you take it. Mariano, who has played very, very little, hasn't always looked awful when he's played, but has played very, very little, and is paid quite a lot of money. And doesn't have a huge desire to move on. And so, of course, how do you deal with this? And this is a problem that lots of big clubs face. How do you deal with a player whose salary is greater than his contribution?
Right. Where do you put him? Which I think especially this summer is going to affect everybody
clubs,
in transfer window. A lot of people still haven't, I think, fully cottoned on to that fact. So, Sid, if I was to say to you right now, in terms of starters, Real Madrid will only have one new face who's also a starter and a regular contributor this season, and that man is David
Alaba.
Would you say that is the likeliest scenario? Like, there's no more. Some guys might leave, maybe somebody for the bench, but that's it. Yeah,
that's it. And by the way, if there is a player that's going to change them, the player that I think hope hangs on most heavily is Hazard. You get Hazard in the season, which he's fully fit, and I think we all know he's still potentially a brilliant player. But let's see what shape he's in. Let's see what his physical condition is. Also, by the way, if by some miracle there was a huge bid for him, don't rule out Real Madrid accepting that as well.
For Hazard? No, there won't be. I can tell you right now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Exactly.
Okay. So, look, if this is the basis, right? Because with all the negativity, if you get Hazard and you can wheel out one of those Arsene Wenger, look, he's like a new signing, quotes.
Yeah.
If you get Hazard,
you get those in Spain all the time. We've already seen it. Yeah. Today the headline. We've already seen El Fichaje es Bale. Bale is signing.
So if you get Hazard back to that level, this is a team that, for all the negativity, and I know that lower points total, whatever, they did go into the last game of the season with a chance to win the Liga title. Yeah. They were beaten in the Champions League by the team that eventually won it.
Yeah.
That should still be a pretty good season, right? You shouldn't necessarily be super negative about what happens in the next 12 months if you're a Madrid fan.
But no one is negative, no?
Nobody's negative, but there is one concern to that. This is a strong squad when you go for it in names, and you go Casemiro, Modric, Cruz, that back four that you've mentioned, a forward line, let's say, for argument's sake, of Benzema, Hazard and one other, whether it's a Asensio or Rodrigo or Vinicius or Bale. That's a pretty strong forward line, really. And this, by the way, is one of the reasons why I don't buy this idea that this year Atletico had a stronger squad than the others. They didn't. It's just not true. But let's go to that middle three. Casemiro, Cruz and Modric, I think, might well be the best midfield in the world 4 years ago. But is it still? And can it be over a long season? Because Modric, when he plays well, I still think is wonderful. Cruz, when he plays well, is still wonderful. But how many games are you going to get out of these guys this year?
Yeah, but that's why you have Valverde. That's why you have Odegaard. Maybe in some games you change the formation. You go 3-4-3.
I think they'll win something next year. I think they will win something
right.
This year with Ancelotti.
There you go.
Wow.
Buck up, Real Madrid fans. Yeah. Carlo's on his way. Sid, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Carlo. No, not really. You can never have too much Carlo. As Paulo Coelho says, he is a warrior of the light. Yeah. But still, how about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
France beat Wales in the Lawrence family derby. Jules, what did you learn, other than the fact that a country of 60 million who are world champions can beat a country of 2.5 million when they go down 10 men?
I learned I didn't sleep on the couch, which was good. Mrs. L, obviously Cardiff born and bred girl, so she was kind to me. We learned that referees can be very stupid, because why would you send off Nico Williams so early in the game for that as well, and just ruin completely a Euro preparation game for the two teams, the two head coaches, for the players as well? It made no sense, because you can't take much from a game where you were 11 against 10 for an hour, and that was France against Wales.
I do. Why, it is a valid point. Should they have slightly different refereeing norms
completely
for friendlies?
Completely. And Lloris, Pogba went to see the referee and said, please don't send him off, let's keep it 11 against 11, it's better for all of us. And no, he still sent him off. So I don't know if there's some, like, if he's been marked on the games that he has when it's a friendly like this by the UEFA referee or something, but that should change. Anyway, Karim Benzema was back for the first time in 5 years and 200 days or something, missed the pen, hit the post, but it was still very good. So I'm happy.
I'm speaking to Roberto Rossetti, the head of the UEFA referees, on Friday. I will raise that question,
please,
on your behalf.
Please, thank you. Mats Hummels and Thomas Müller also returned them to the Germany national team after the exile. Not as big exile as Karim Benzema, but the result was 1-1 in a draw against Denmark. Gab, still many questions for Jogi Löw, right?
Yeah, so to be fair to them, there were no Chelsea players in the squad, obviously, because of the... Yeah, but this is not a good performance.
And no Man City,
it was
players.
Slow. It was laborious.
It was.
I actually thought Hummels was at fault for the goal as well. I mean, great pass from Eriksen to Poulsen, but still. Thomas Müller looked a little bit better. He played center forward, but again, or his own interpretation of center forward. Yeah. I don't know what you learned from this, other than the fact that you got a game under your belt.
And they still can't defend, though.
No. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
England beat Austria 1-0. Jules, there were a million players missing again. No United players, no City players, no Chelsea members. So maybe it's best not to make a big deal out of this, although I did enjoy Jack Grealish.
Yeah, me too. Can I make a big deal about Jesse Lingard?
What?
How can you start a player in a game like this that is preparing you for the Euros, and that player is not going to be at the Euros?
Well, because somebody might get injured, you can still make changes to your squad, and so
what? He should not be in that team, considering that he's not going to be at the Euros.
He might be at the Euros now,
but right now he isn't at the Euros. He's not going. He's not on that plane.
So why would you play him in a game? You only have two games to prepare you for the Euros, and yet you play people who are not going to be there.
Well, look, he would have had to play another winger, and surely the only winger option on the bench was Jadon Sancho, and who's ever heard of him? Clearly, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I agree.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'm assuming
to me.
Sancho wasn't fit.
Yeah, I think he was ill. He had a bit of illness, but still, whatever, you could find another way. But I like Grealish. Bukayo Saka scored his first England goal, which was great. First start for Bellingham as well, before the Euros, which is good for him. So there was some positive stuff, but they didn't play well. Nova in the England game, Gab. So I guess this was why Tyrone Mings, who started at the back, thought it was a good idea to try to decapitate Sasa Kalajic, the Austria striker.
I was absolutely shocked by this. I saw the replay of it. I don't know what goes... Tyrone Mings, I've heard him speak. He's an intelligent guy. He's an educated guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what goes through your mind. If I'm Southgate, I take him aside and say, I don't know if there's a mechanism to punish you retrospectively. And obviously Kalajic, because he's the size of a building, didn't get hurt. But still, this is really bad. And
it was
bad. I hope we never see this again. And it's bad news for Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, we'll know for sure later on. Mm. That didn't look good. At the very end of the game, he's really, really upset. He somehow injured himself without getting touched. Maybe it's a muscle, something's gone. Maybe.
Yeah, it looks like it's a thigh injury with a muscle. And so close to the Euros, it's not good. Because if you're going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks, there's no point.
When there's enough right backs already.
Especially at his position. So you have to feel, especially the roller coaster that he's been for him, being dropped in March, being back, not sure if he was going to make the squad. He made the squad, played, and then all of that.
I do feel it's if it's sad. 3 weeks and you have 26 players, maybe you take him along just in case.
Yeah, I agree. Both teams, England and Austria, took a knee before kickoff, Gab, in Middlesbrough, and they were booed by some portions of the crowd. This is your topic. You must have gone mad in front of the television.
I was annoyed that they were being booed equally. As you know my thoughts on this. You know, when it's institutional, it says, yes, we're all going to do this, it loses value and it's going to enable people to go and boo. Much better. Leave it up to the players, ones who want to do it, but we don't need this corporate stamp of approval, I think. Holland and Scotland battled to a 2-2 draw, a late equalizer. Jules, it's more opportunity for you to have a go at Frank de Boer. Did you notice he got Quincy Menig, who's not in the squad, muddled up with Quincy Promise, who is in the squad?
And that's if that was only that, Gab, but he did so much more. I mean, this is brilliant. And every opportunity we have to highlight how incompetent and useless Frank de Boer is, the better. Because, yes, he got Quincy Promise and Quincy Menig mixed up, saying that Quincy Menig would be perfect in that right wing back position in his 3-5-2 formation. But Quincy Menig is not in the squad, so we assume he was talking about another Quincy, maybe. Going back to that 3-5-2 formation, which is a completely stupid idea because they don't play well in that formation. It doesn't suit the players. The players don't like it themselves. And yet, he persevered and still said this is the best. We can play well in it and all of that, which is completely crazy. He also justified the fact that Donny van de Beek has made the squad for the Euros by saying he's played 4,000 minutes with Manchester United this season. Well, no, he hasn't, because he's played 1,400 and something minutes.
And he got confused. Training sessions, maybe?
Maybe training session. Maybe he counted all the miles that, he went on a plane, on a journey with his car, going to the supermarket.
By the time he was warming up on the sideline.
Yeah, on the sideline, exactly. Because he probably got confused with another player, David Klaassen maybe, or someone like that. I mean, it's just the amount of rubbish that De Boer either says or does since he took over that national team is just beyond me. I can't understand how he will lead that team at the Euros.
Can you think of a Dutch manager who would be a worse option to replace Ronald Koeman than Frank De Boer?
No.
Okay, so and I don't if know it comes down to Koeman idea. Or De Boer, you keep Koeman, yeah?
God, who's got the idea that he should get sacked and never work again in football? Six Scotland players missed the game against the Dutch as precaution, Gab, after John Fleck tested positive for COVID. And that spectre remains of COVID disturbing everything.
I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but we need to remind ourselves we're not out of it. Things may be improving in some countries, but this is why we have 26-man squads at the Euros. Antonio Conte is the bookie's favorite to take over at Spurs. Jules, my understanding is that there is a ways to go before reaching a deal, but he's definitely interested. If you were Daniel Levy, what would you do to convince him?
Wow.
Or would you could try to convince him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you
start... When you can get Eddie Howe.
Yeah, or someone else, I guess. you tell him that he will have money to spend and that you can bring his friend Fabio Paratici as a sporting director, so the old duo is back together, they can do a work to, job together. But there's no way Conte will go to Spurs if you tell him we're not going to sign anyone this summer, you will have to work with this squad. I think, as we know, Conte likes going somewhere and being able to strengthen the position if he feels needs strengthening, which is fair.
I think, look, I've been critical of Conte in the past. Conte wants plans and he wants budgets, and he says when he's gotten angry in the past, he's always said it's because he was promised things that weren't delivered, right? That's what he says, and you believe him or not.
Yeah,
I think he knows what Spurs' situation is, but I think he's attractive to them because they think maybe he can help retain Harry Kane, maybe he can help improve some of the individuals in the squad. Paratici, I think, is a separate issue, but obviously be comfortable working with him. And the other thing is, you know, to be fair to Conte, he's done the best job he ever did for me is with Italy at Euro 2016, when he had the worst Italy squad in terms of talent in 50-odd years, and they ended up going out in penalties. And he is somebody who can build teams over time. I mean, he helped build this Inter team in 2 years. At Chelsea, they finished 10th the year before. He won the title in his first season. At Juve, you know, they hadn't won anything, excluding those titles that were stripped in 2006. They hadn't won anything. He takes over in 2011 after years of underachievement, and boom, he wins three straight titles. So and he can have that impact.
3-5-2 is his favorite formation, right? And in this Spurs squad, even the current squad,
well,
you could think that Doherty and Reguilón are perfect wing-backs. And that he would like
that. He made his name playing 4-2-4, actually.
Yeah, true.
But might be a bit
too
exotic.
Lately, it's more three at the back. Yeah. And I think there's got players in that squad that would fit in that formation.
Yeah, no question.
Gab, part of this Conte interest is also based on the fact that former Juventus sporting director Fabio Paratici, as we've just mentioned, could be also moving as well to Spurs. As you said, it's a different, there's two different things, but that deal is more advanced than the Conte one.
Yeah, definitely more advanced. In fact, Paratici is scheduled to speak on Friday, I believe, his farewell to Juventus. And then after that, I think things could move rather quickly. It would be interesting, you know, if Daniel Levy decides to go back to a real director of football. Last time he had one, I believe, was Franco Baldini. It might have been somebody after that. Obviously, with Mourinho there, you're not going to have that sort of setup. Or even Pochettino, who liked to kind of have a strong hold. But in this context, I think you need an expert director of recruitment who can go and make things happen.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Jules, now I have to ask, because the Pochettino back to Real Madrid story won't go away. You're still confident staying put at Paris Saint-Germain, right?
Well, more confident now that Real Madrid have another manager, and that it looks like Spurs have another manager, and certainly Spurs have not gone further.
It's easy on Spurs. We're not there yet with
Bournemouth. No, but still, they haven't made any contact with PSG or anything like this.
Okay. And
so I'm quietly confident.
Why won't they give him a new deal?
Well, no, that might happen. And I think there's a lot of people...
Who's going to get a new deal first, Mbappe or Pochettino?
Ooh... Both of them at the same time, and they can sign together, you know, beyond that.
On or
that
maybe sort they can leave together.
Stage together.
That?
Oh, don't say that. Barcelona have been busy bees, of course. Sergio Aguero and Eric Garcia are already on board on free contract. Gini Wijnaldum and Memphis Depay seems on their way. Now, it's the minor issue of a certain Lionel Messi and who to manage to be resolved.
Listen, we've said this before. There were reports, which have been wrong, confirmed that Messi had reached a deal, but then nobody followed up on it, so I'm assuming that's not accurate.
But Laporta seems confident.
Laporta's super confident. It seems to me a little bit backside backwards, because I use that to not use another word, which rhymes with last, to go and not get the big stuff done first. It's not like Wijnaldum and Aguero are going away.
True.
If you tell them, hey, let's sort out Messi first. It's not like, you know, there's a queue of people willing to sign up Aguero right now. I don't know. I would get the other part. I would have had the other part nailed down first. But again, he says he's confident. Not 100% on Koeman at all. I do wonder if they get Depay, too. That starts being a lot of bodies up front. Depay, Aguero, Messi, Griezmann,
and profiles that don't fit with each other.
Braithwaite.
Yeah, but even if...
Ansu Fati.
Yeah, true. And also profiles and style of plays that don't really go with each other.
Yeah, I'm not sure Laporta worries about these. He's more of a big picture kind of guy.
Yeah.
Manchester United's transfer machine is kicking into gear. Tom Heaton is on his way. So, Jules, does that mean that David De Gea, Dean Henderson are out, or do you actually need three senior goalkeepers?
You can have three senior goalkeepers, but certainly the idea is still to let De Gea go.
Why don't you sign Sam Johnston too and have four?
But De Gea making so much money in terms of wages and You think Dean Henderson will stay as a number one goalkeeper for next season. So I'm not sure it makes sense to keep De Gea if you can try to loan him out or even sell him.
I think you're not going to sell him. You're not going to be able to with his wages. You're going to have to loan him out and pay a chunk of his wages the way you 50%. Did.
But that was still better than keeping him just to play now and again.
The alternative is they think they can get money back for Dean Henderson. But I don't know. That, to me, that would seem... I'd go with Henderson over De Gea, personally.
And United also being linked, Gab, with my boy Raphael Varane and Kieran Trippier. Does that make sense to you, Kieran Trippier?
Trippier, who can play left-back now, we've sort of discovered as well. Yeah, I don't really get that unless you can kind of... Remember the old movie The Fly, where like you sort of try to combine two people in one?
Yeah,
you can combine Trippier and Wan-Bissaka together.
True.
Like, there might be certain games where Wan-Bissaka is more appropriate, others Trippier is more appropriate. I don't quite like his age profile for United, for what they're doing. Varane, I think, would be a tremendous signing. I don't understand why Varane would necessarily want to do it.
To work with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Oh, maybe it's been a lifelong dream of his. No, look, if I'm Varane, I say put and weigh up my options a year from now.
Definitely.
The PFA have put out their six-man shortlist for the Player of the Year award in England. Bruno Fernandes, Harry Kane, Ilkay Gundogan, Phil Foden, Ruben Dias, and Kevin De Bruyne. Weirdly, they're doing the slate. Does it make sense to you? Yeah. No Mo Salah?
No Mo Salah, no. Four City players. That's a lot of them.
City were pretty good.
Yeah, but my choice, as you know, Gab, already Ruben Dias. But yeah, maybe a bit surprising that Salah is not in that list.
It's players vote on this. Who knows when they vote? Yeah. I don't think people take this very seriously.
Romelu Lukaku goes on Belgian television to tell the world that he's staying at Inter. Is it relief all around, Gab?
I think so.
Do you believe him as well?
Of course I believe Romelu Lukaku. Come on, man.
He
says, oh, and I've already spoken to the new manager as well, who of course is Simone Inzaghi. I think this is big. This is important. I think Inter fans have come around to the idea that they have to sacrifice one big player. It looks like it's going to be Hakimi. I think Hakimi, while he's phenomenal, is going to be easier to replace than Romelu Lukaku, at least for Inter right now. So it's a little sliver of good news for Inter fans.
I agree.
Kevin De Bruyne will miss Belgium's opener and have to play with an eye mask after the injury he picked up in the Champions League final. Is this a big deal for Belgium?
It is a big deal if it's more than just one game. If it's just the opening game, I think that would be okay. If it starts going maybe two, maybe three, maybe the whole group stages, then it would have to be a worry. But I think they can just about cope without him for that first game. And then if he's back and rested and fit and all of that, that the mask doesn't bother him, that he doesn't feel any problem with his face, then I think he'd be good. It's just a shame. It's not an ideal way to prepare for such a big competition when your best player is in that kind of state.
Important question. Would you go for the clear mask, the flesh-coloured mask, or would you go for the Antonio Rudiger badass black mask?
Batman mask. No, for Kevin, I would see something a bit more discreet.
A bit more understated. Yeah, yeah. Fit his personality. Yeah.
Manchester City chairman Khaldun Al-Mubarak says that it was a mistake for his club to join the Super League, but because they are so driven to be the best, they will continue to be disruptive. Also said that they were ready to spend a lot of money this summer.
Yeah.
What does disruptive mean?
Okay, so people forget this, but Khaldun Al-Mubarak, he does this in his spare time running City.
Yeah.
He has a day job, which is far more important.
Yeah, with far more money at stake. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the head of Mubadala Corporation. They manage more than $200 billion in assets. They invest in tech. They invest a lot of things. And one of the big buzzwords is when you make these new investments, you want to be a disruptor. You want to be it's a good thing to disrupt. Yeah. In a football context, disruption, not always so good. I don't think that was super clear to him. But I think what was neat was, you know, he said it was a mistake. We'll continue to make mistakes. We just want to do it because we want to be better, blah, blah, blah. All right, fair enough. You completely misjudged the fans. But I also get from his perspective, and I do think he's telling the truth, from my understanding, is the other clubs, I'm not saying they didn't want Man City, but they generally don't particularly like Man City. And it was kind of like, you get on the train or you stay off the train.
Yeah.
Now you have to decide quickly. So I have a modicum of sympathy with them on this issue.
That's fair enough.
Everton will need a new manager to replace Carletto Ancelotti. Looks as if Nuno Espirito Santo is a favorite. David Moyes and Paulo Fonseca have also been mentioned. Jules, you seem very inspired and excited by these options. You got better ones?
No, Nuno, please. Why? I mean, why? I don't see the appeal. Why, if you're Everton, if you're Moshiri, if you're Marcel Brands, if you're that club, you think, let's replace Carlo Ancelotti with Nuno.
What? And bring those people into our house.
Well, Nuno, Jorge Mendes, a very defensive with results at times. I'm not saying that what he did at Wolves was bad, but surely this is not the kind of football that they should aim for. He's not a builder in the sense that, you know, he can really create something and build bases to go forwards. I'm just not sure about Nuno. I'm not sure about David Moyes as well. I like Paulo Fonseca a lot, as you know, Gab, and I know you like him too. But certainly in terms of the football that he likes, what he implements to his squad, to his players, the vision that he has, even on a sort of mid-term basic, is surely better than what Nuno can offer.
Yeah, I'm on board with Paulo. I think that kind of attacking football would really liven up Everton, you know, more so than Moyes, who did a phenomenal season last year. But again, I don't know if it really makes sense for him. Or even if right now, as we speak, West Ham aren't in a better position, certainly, than Everton are.
And surely Everton could do better. I mean, they have the new stadium coming. They've got a great training ground. They have spent money. They've got a good squad. And there's more money probably being available as well. So I think there would be a lot of really potential good managers to be ready for this and available.
Yeah, I would think so.
The Copa America has officially been switched from Colombia and Argentina to Brazil now, Gab. The only problem is that their infection rates for COVID are similar to Argentina's and their borders are closed. Why? What the hell?
Players have spoken out about it. Well, they have to play it somewhere. I think they floated the idea for about 5 minutes. Like, oh, why don't we just bring it to the U.S.? You know, kind of forgetting that, like, should we hey, look, the U.S. has its own competition, the Gold Cup.
Yes.
And
true.
By the way, like, the U.S. border is even more difficult to get in. I think, you know, Chile looked to be an option. Chile's a better situation. I can understand Chile also not wanting to take a chance. I don't know. I just hope people stay safe and this doesn't have a knock-on consequence. It's already been moved once. Obviously, it was supposed to be played last summer. Let's just go. Let's play this. This is the oldest international, you know, major international competition for countries in the world. It predates the World Cup.
Yeah.
This is really important. It's really important to me. It's really important to the heritage of the game. Let's just, you know, keep our fingers crossed that this goes off the way it should. Jules, we haven't mentioned Erling Haaland yet.
No.
He popped up in injury time to score the winner against Luxembourg.
Oh, God.
I think we expect a little bit more from our Norwegian friends.
Definitely,
huh?
But they were not good at all. I mean, Luxembourg have improved. We've said that before. And obviously they beat Ireland, didn't they, in the last international
break. It's still Luxembourg break. And it's still Norway Luxembourg. And Haaland.
But hey, it's a goal for Erling Haaland. It's just not good. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's been a long season for all the Norwegian players, and they just need to go on holidays and have a bit of a break. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge will make way for Oliver Kahn at the top at Bayern. Gab, is this significant?
Well, we knew it was coming for a long time. Yeah. Presumably, Ollie Kahn has studied. I don't know what experience he has as chief executive, but that's fine. He's presumably learning on the job. I think a lot's going to depend on what Mr. Hoeneß thinks, because he's still there in the background. And you know, I think Rummenigge was in a position perhaps to stand up to him more. We'll see how it works out. But I like the fact that they keep it in-house and try to train up players for the job. It does mean something to them, the whole Mia San Mia.
Yeah.
I think that's admirable.
Yeah.
Now, sticking with Bayern, Borussia Mönchengladbach star Florian Neuhaus, who scored the goal for them against Denmark, denies reports that he has a deal in place to join Bayern when his contract expires in June 2022. Jules, you're laughing. Are you a cynic? Are you being a cynic here?
Florian, we know what you're doing. They've all done it before. Lewandowski and Götze and all the players who arrived.
Does his nose get a little bit longer when he talks?
Free agent. We know that you already have an agreement. You'll have one more year at Mönchengladbach, and then you will go on a free to Bayern like so many others before. And that's fine. That's fine with us, isn't it?
If
that's his choice, it would be better to make some money for your club. But if you don't want to, that's fair enough. Liverpool are looking to extend Adrian for another season and send Quavin Kelleher out on loan. Does that make sense, Gab?
I thought Kelleher looked reasonable, but they...
Yeah, I guess he needs more to play than Adrian, right?
Yeah, when you're a young backup goalkeeper, you're not going to learn anything backing up Alisson. So Adrian's happy to be a backup. Why not? You know, send him out on loan, hopefully to do it. I'm guessing a team in the Championship, maybe even the Premier League, and get him minutes and you know, start thinking, start assessing what you have longer term.
I agree.
Let's talk Euro under 21. France and Italy are both out. At least we took it to extra time, and we also we only had one player sent off this time.
Yeah, true.
It's Spain v Portugal, who beat Italy, and Holland, who beat France, against Germany. Who you got?
It was a couple hours,
so we only look stupid by making predictions.
Yeah, it's not about predictions, but Portugal look really good, I have to say, against Italy. They've got a really good generation, better than Holland and Germany, who Holland were not impressive. They had two shots on target, scored two goals on the counter against France. Fair enough, we were not very good. And Germany were not that impressive either, neither was Spain. So for me, Portugal all the way as a winner.
But France still the best team in this tournament.
Of course, but we've got just a bad manager. We just have the worst manager ever. Milan are confident they can sign Fikayo Tomori from Chelsea in the next 48 hours. But it doesn't look like they're going to budge on Hakan Çalhanoğlu. Gab, that's the right call, no?
Absolutely. You know my thing is...
Same with Donnarumma, we said it.
Yeah, hold the line. You should have held it with Zlatan too, fine. Yeah. You know, one out of three, that's a sign. Yeah, enough. You're going to have to find somebody to replace him, obviously. And I'm not sure that's Brian Diaz. But in the meantime, if they can get Tomori, they were hoping to get a discount from Chelsea on the 28 million euros that they'd agreed upon. Doesn't look like that's going to happen, but push the boat out. Tomori's young, he's talented, he wants to be
there. Really good signing at that price.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, your boy Olivier Giroud seems to be torn between a two-year deal at Milan again, and a one-year extension at Chelsea.
Yeah.
What should he choose, and what will he choose?
It has to be down to game time, Gab. And if he feels like staying at Chelsea, and he would just be playing 5-10 minutes there and there, maybe a bit more in the FA Cup or something, when he can actually have more game time at Milan, because Ibra is older and he's the backup, and he will.
Ibra decides when he plays, so.
Yeah, but Ibra won't play 60 games in the season. That's impossible, and we've seen it this year. There's no reason why next year would be very different to this year. So Milan, you've got a two-year deal compared to one at Chelsea.
If you're sure that Tammy Abraham is leaving, and that Chelsea aren't going to go and sign a big striker.
Yeah, but we know that Chelsea want to go and sign a big striker.
I know, but how many strikers out there are there who are better than what Chelsea already have? Since Lukaku's off the list. Okay, so obviously if Chelsea sign Haaland, then I'm Giroud. I'm like, hey, here was my ticket.
I know what you mean.
But do you know what I mean?
Like, Yeah. But Tammy Abraham has been at the club this year, and Giroud hasn't played much. And Abraham hasn't played either. So it's not because Abraham will leave that Giroud will play more.
I think at this stage, I think Tuchel's ideas have crystallized a little bit. And I think we're not going to see Werner at center forward. We'll see him just behind. I think Havertz will be the starting center forward. Again, assuming they don't go inside or whatever. And then you're the first guy off the bench, and you've got a different skill set. You can play with Havertz too. I don't know.
I think it's a tough choice for him to make. Lazio's deal to bring Maurizio Sarri as the new manager is more complicated than we thought, Gab. Is this why they've been linked to former Porto and Olympiacos manager Vitor Pereira, as well as Fabio Liverani?
Yeah, Sarri wants a lot of money because he made a lot of money at Juve. He made a lot of money at Chelsea. And, you know, that's their thinking. So now they're having a rethink and saying, well, this guy Vitor Pereira has bounced around, but he won the title twice at Porto.
Yeah, yeah.
He's won it in Greece. He was at Fenerbahce. I think that didn't quite work out as well. I think he's in China now. Liverani would be interesting. Obviously, he's a former Lazio player.
Yeah.
He's also a person of color, which I think is also relevant as well within the context of Lazio, and I think some of the strides that they have been working on to shed some of their negative image on these matters.
Definitely.
The Times reports that Wilfried Zaha wants to leave Crystal Palace. Jules, he's got a few years left in the tank, doesn't he?
Yeah, but the problem is not how long he's got left on the tank, Gab, is how much money Crystal Palace will want for him, which has always been the issue, because I think he has wanted to leave for a long time. But you can't ask 60, 70, 80 million pound or euros or whatever you want for a player like Zaha.
2 years left, they got to grow up. And
they will have to go lower. And then I hope they will open the door for him, because this is a summer for them where they will have a lot of players leaving, a lot of them out of contract, a new manager coming in, new players coming in, and they owe him to Zaha for everything he's done for that club, to just let him go at a decent price.
Maybe he can replace Mbappe at Paris Saint-Germain.
Oh my God. That's so bad. A few shows ago, I think, or maybe on Monday, we told you that Giacomo Raspadori would not be in the Italy squad for the Euros. And Gab, he's back. You must be happy.
I am happy.
He deserved it as well.
Yes.
He had a good season.
Look, we have the off-brand Sergio Aguero here. And Italy need three strikers in the tournament. It's not like the other two. It's not like they have twin Lewandowskis, as I mentioned before. So Immobile, Belotti, and Raspadori is a third
option. And great experience for a young player as well.
Yeah, he was with the under-21s. He did all right with them. Now let him play with the big boys.
Yeah.
Mark van Bommel is the new Wolfsburg boss. Bet he'll serve up sparkling football jewels. And by the way, can I just clarify something? You have nothing against Dutch managers. I'm just thinking because I do see a pattern, right? Van Gaal, De Boer, Van Bommel.
Koeman.
Yeah. I mean, there's some that you like, yeah?
But just tell me, okay. You're Wolfsburg, sporting director, president, whatever you want. You've lost Oliver Glasner, who had a really good season. It's not a cup of tea the way they play, but...
No, it's not fun to watch.
What did you see from Van Bommel's time at PSV Eindhoven, where he was there for a year, that convinced you 2 years down the line to go and say, you know what, Van Bommel would be great for us?
I honestly don't know how these things work. I love the Bundesliga, but it seems to me there's so many clubs where, and their model where, as we've said this before, it's about the director of football and whatever else. I think it's good. It provides continuity and stability. But your managers aren't all interchangeable and expendable. They're different people. Why you would turn to Van Bommel,
Like on what grounds?
Maybe he can speak dialect to Wout Weghorst.
Maybe. Bournemouth's Jefferson Lerma is facing a six-game ban for biting an opponent, Sheffield Wednesday, Josh Windass. Gab, are you going to make a Luis Suarez joke?
No, I'm going to make a Windass joke. Okay. Right? That's actually his name, so I can say Windass. Right? No, he's Dean Windass's son.
Yes.
No, look, joking aside, this biting, I didn't see the incident. I don't know about the incident.
Yeah.
But it's gross. It's disgusting. It's not disgusting. What you want to copy from Luis Suarez.
Definitely not.
Our Covidiot segment is back this week, and it stars none other than the King Arturo Vidal.
Well done, Arturo, who's in hospital, by the way, hospitalized after testing positive for COVID. And you know how he got COVID?
He has tonsillitis, doesn't he?
Yeah, tonsillitis and positive for COVID at the same time. Yeah, so he went to see his horses and had a little party in a private restaurant, in a luxurious restaurant as well, with loads of friends taking photos with no mask, hugging people. Kissing people, having fun with people, I don't know. But yeah, well done.
Just so they suspended quarantine rules for him to go in to get into the country because he's national team. But they said, look, no quarantine for you, but just stick to your family and friends.
Exactly, your bubble.
Yeah, and evidently the horses are part of the bubble.
Too much to ask for Arturo Vidal. Antonio Rudiger has named his daughter, new baby daughter, Alia Trophy, in honor, Gab, of course, of the Champions League that he's just won. I guess it would be a perpetual reminder. Every time he sees her and says, hey, Alia Trophy, come here.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's better than Alia Cup or Alia UEFA Champions League.
Yeah.
Whatever floats his boat. I was just thinking, the little girl's really, really cute. I saw the pictures. I like Antonio Rudiger.
Yeah,
Antonio
congratulations Rudiger, for the...
He is in my top 10 Germans of all time.
Okay,
so well done, Antonio. All right, that brings us to an end this week, but I think we got to come back on Monday.
For sure.
And do this again as the Euros draw closer.
Yes.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.